Does God's law condemn the sinner or guide the sinner to a richer life? Welcome to the Good Word. We continue our series, Glimpses of Our God. Our theme for today is God, the Lawgiver. The conversation partners are the same two members of the Walla Walla University School of Theology that we've had for this series. Stravko Stefanovic, Old Testament, Paul Dibdahl, New Testament, and Missions. So, let's take that question. What's the role of law? Does it condemn or does it guide to life?
Yes. I think we answered together on one of your previous questions.
But let's say this, primarily to guide.
Okay.
Primarily to guide.
But in our culture, wouldn't you admit that that's not the way most people would experience the word law? I mean, have you ever heard anybody say, it's the law, with a friendly tone of voice? Doesn't that sound pretty hostile?
Yeah.
It's the law.
Yeah, I think of, the names that we associate with Christian churches.
Yeah.
Grace is one that we'll throw in there. Community, Bible church. We don't have many churches that are,
Church of
God's law. It sounds, when you take law and you couple with it religious language, I think for most people that seems especially restricting and even offensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think law has a particularly positive connotation, at least religious law in this society.
I like to play in my classes with the seatbelt requirement. Now, if you look, you don't even have to look very closely, but on my forehead, there is a long scar, carefully put together, but it comes from when I wasn't wearing my seatbelt back in my junior year in college. I was on the driver's side with my wife-to-be, et cetera, and we met up with a telephone pole. So I don't have to be reminded to wear a seatbelt. And to this day, when I rub my forehead, I can feel it at the top of my head. See?
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned the hard way. And so what we try to do now is make laws. What's the nicest law, seatbelt law sign that you have seen? Can you remember one?
Click it or ticket is about the only one that I can.
That's the worst one, and that's the only one that really works.
I like the one. I do not know if it is related to that or the speed limit, where there are kids telling the parents, "Please drive safely. We are waiting for you." Something like that.
Well, the one I'm thinking of speed.
Seatbelt.
Seatbelts. Yeah, is the one, and I think there's over by the Walla Walla General Hospital. Is still there. Hmm. Two hearts. Buckle up. We love you. And it doesn't work. Nobody pays attention to it. And so then there's the harsher one, buckle up, it's the law, and the attempt to soften that just a bit, buckle up, it's our law.
Mm-hmm.
But the one that works, click it or ticket. See, it's costly. See,
mm-hmm.
So why do we have law? Now, Stravko, you were saying that it's one of your favorite topics. So put a good spin on law for us, please.
Well, the purpose of God's law is to bring us back to Him whenever we are at a distance from God, and tell us a little of what God. It tells us a little what God wants His children to do, and I do not easily equate the biblical term Torah with what we say as law. I believe that came into the picture later on, probably with the coming of the Persians, who were very generous conquerors, and they judged the people by their own laws and so on. So there was a need for the law of Israel, and that's how Torah became Daat. That was the Persian term. Or nomos later on in the Old Testament. But I believe that when we talk about the Torah, it's God's instruction, God's teaching.
Nomos is the New Testament word in Greek.
Correct, right? In Greek, yes. Yeah. And that is the Aramaic term, because Aramaic became the official language of the Persian Empire.
Okay.
And that's when actually we have God's revelation as the Torah, his teaching, his instruction, viewed more and more in purely legal terms.
Uh-huh.
But actually when we look at the Old Testament revelation, like the first five books of the Bible, we have stories, we have songs, we have sayings, we have a variety of literary forms. And therefore, there is a danger. Even the Ten Commandments, you know, in various translations, they sound more like laws than in the original Hebrew.
Huh.
I can give a number of proofs to show that.
Well, as a matter of fact, one of the curious wrinkles about Hebrew is that there is no such thing as a negative imperative.
Correct.
And I remember one of my colleagues, now deceased, Malcolm Maxwell, he used to love to play on the Ten Commandments and turn them into indicatives. You know, you won't kill, you won't steal. And I think that's good theology, but if you read Exodus 19:20 or Deuteronomy 5, the people were scared to death. See?
They were, but then, you know, I've tried to find a single imperative. That's a grammatical form, single imperative in the Ten Commandments, and I couldn't.
But you do have two infinitive absolutes, which...
Those are the infinitive absolutes, and I believe that they are the titles or the summary of the whole commandment. Yes, like remembering the Sabbath day to keep it holy.
Uh-huh.
Remembering or honoring one's parents.
Uh-huh.
And therefore, there is a story behind it as well, and God's blessing tied to it. But there is no direct imperative, even in the Ten Commandments. It's more like promises. Because I have done so much for you, you don't want to be enslaved again and go into such and such kind of life.
But why then, and let me press you on this, Stravko, why then do you have such terror at Mount Sinai, both Exodus and in Deuteronomy?
Probably the best answer we can come up with is runaway slaves, and therefore fear. The concept of fear is very prominent because, after all, for generations, several generations, the children of Israel were in Egypt and so on. And yet, it's a beautiful testimony that terror did not accomplish as much as we would normally expect terror could accomplish.
Now, there's one passage which I love in Deuteronomy chapter 4. It comes before the giving of the Ten Commandments. And I like to draw the parallel in our culture between a warranty agreement and a user-friendly owner's manual. When I look at a warranty agreement, I just kind of get a bit of a chill down my spine because I remember those conversations. Mr. Thompson, we would like to be able to help you, but did you notice the fine print here? See? And that's where I think I looked at God's judgment and God's law. And he was looking for excuses to keep me out of the kingdom. But if you take a look at the user-friendly owner's manual, it's a positive experience. You rejoice when you have one that you can read. So this is in Deuteronomy 4, for example, verses 5 to 8. I'll just read it here because I think it's such a marvelous statement of God's intention when it comes to law. See, just as the Lord my God has charged me, I now teach you statutes and ordinances for you to observe in the land that you are about to enter and occupy. You must observe them diligently, for this will show your wisdom and discernment to the peoples who, when they hear all these statutes, will say, surely this great nation is a wise and discerning people, for what other great nation has a God so near to it as the Lord our God is whenever we call to him? And what other great nation has statutes and ordinances as just as this entire law that I am setting before you today?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, very positive.
Very positive type of thing. And I think that perspective, which is reflected in Psalm 119, the longest psalm, is one which just celebrates the goodness of Torah. Now, let's make a transition to the New Testament. Why is it that you have traces in the New Testament that law has now become a burden? Perhaps the most revealing one is in Peter's statement in Acts 15, when he talks about why do we lay on the Gentiles a burden which neither we nor our parents or our ancestors have been able to bear. He's talking about God-given laws here, but our experience as a burden. Can you help me to understand how that might have happened?
I don't know for sure. I actually wanted to tell a little story, and then maybe it's just avoiding your question, Alden. You can ask the same question.
Right. I can come back and ask
but,
again. That's all right.
sometimes when we talk about law, a common illustration we use is the speed limit, and we referenced it very briefly earlier on in our lesson. Yeah. I just came back from a weekend retreat in the mountains on a road that was unfamiliar to me, a windy road along a river, and there were stretches, long straightaways, where there was a speed limit sign posted, and I related to that as a limitation, a kind of cramping of my freedom, restriction, in a sort of negative way. And I wished I could have just sort of opened it up along those straightaways. At the same time, there were places in the road where there was a curve coming up, and I was unfamiliar with exactly what lay ahead. And there would be a sign along the side, again, with a speed limit indicator for that curve. And I looked at that sign with appreciation because it helped me to know at what would be the safe rate for me to approach that yeah. unfamiliar turn. Yeah. And I think we ought to probably relate to God's instruction and God's law as that second sort of sign. Yeah. Living in a world we don't know the world as well as we think we do oftentimes. Uh-huh. And God gives us this guidance as to yeah. here is something you ought to keep in mind as you make your way along life's journey.
That's a wonderful illustration, Paul. You know, recently I was coming back from Spokane, and there is a shortcut that you can take, mm-hmm. you know, where there are almost no signs, no speed limits posted, although you know what the speed limit is. But I elected, since I was coming in the dark hours, I elected not to take that shortcut because I knew there wouldn't be signs
yeah.
warning
mm-hmm.
me, and I didn't want to be caught mm-hmm. that way. So,
if it is okay, I would like to comment about the negative attitude toward the law. I believe that in the context of the New Testament, the teachers, especially the teachers in Judaism, in addition to viewing the Old Testament as a collection of laws in the Pentateuch itself, like 613, they have a multitude, we can say, of oral laws defining every possible move in life. It became so cumbersome and so condemning to the person who tried to keep them all. And therefore, I believe that the normal outcome, very negative in that, was that by doing that, the law can save us. I mean, by observing the law, the person can be sure that the Torah, the law, will save him or her. And therefore, the reaction of the New Testament is, no, the law was not intended to save us. The law is here to tell us that we need a Savior.
Yeah.
So we don't use a mirror to wash our face.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that burden of having additional instructions can be very burdensome, but we'll have to explore that in one of our lessons later. Our time is up. Next week, we are going to talk about the Lord of the Sabbath, which gives a marvelous opportunity to explore a very precious gift to us. My conversation partners will again be Strobko and Paul. My thanks to Chad Ochterhauer, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in. For good work.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.